annals of history.
There has been some mighty trios. Alvin and the Chipmunks, Harry, Ron and Hermione, and the Bee Gees.
Well, sure, there's only one of them now, but you get the drift.
Now, from a small bedroom in Queanbeyan,
these three men will try and make sense of the world with their words. And if words fail them, there's always this.
Ben Edwards with a huge finish!
But let's hope it doesn't come to that.
Thanks to the butcher shop, Dixon and Kayleen. Please welcome Scotty, No I Don't Know Why I Got Fired Masters, Ben the Governor Edwards,
and Steve, Golden Tonsils Payos.
It is the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast, Season 2, Episode 7. I'm Scotty Masters.
I'm Benny Edwards.
I'm Stevie P. And Steve, we have in the studio with us...
Saif the Anger.
Hey!
From the Brumbies, of course, Wallabies legend, and soon to be playing for the London Irish. And we may get a text message during our podcast tonight, say you could be off on a plane tomorrow to London, buddy.
Well, I could be on the 350 flight. Just receive a text and... Yeah, off we go. See you later, Australia.
Nice. All right. Well, we'll get to all that. Stevie, you've lined Say to come up for us. How'd that all happen, mate? You were sitting out the front of the car with him.
What was going on there, man?
What was that, a pre-podcast warm-up? sitting in the car with the interior light on while Ben and I were staring through my blinds like a couple of teenage girls going, What are they doing?
He's actually crying. He's going deep in me. I don't want you to leave.
Don't leave, brother. Stay.
I had to get him in the right mindset to get up here. So.
Yeah. He was warming me up this week. So it was good to have Sayer here. He's a very good friend of mine. I've known him for a long time since school, since the days of primary school when I was 4'5" and he was 6'6". Barreling over everybody in school and nothing's changed. Still a legend and still killing it. So next adventure for Sayer, obviously heading over to England to play for London Irish in the English Premiership. They've just been promoted. And that's going to be fantastic for them. And obviously, once Sayer gets fit again after his foot injury, he'll be ready to go and tear it up over there in the English Premiership. And then hopefully they can also make it into things like the European Cup as well, which is fantastic over there and all sorts of exposure for him. So fantastic to have him on.
Very nice. Benny, how have you been this week, mate? Second week post-fight. How's the finger and how's the toes, man?
Yeah, I'm all good, mate. Got my stitches out the other day. Toes are coming along all right.
Nice.
It's still fat and black.
Did you guys have the same injury or what? Tell Say the injury you had. You probably had the exact same thing.
Yeah, what did?
I broke two toes in three places, kicking one of my mates.
the Friday before the fight.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
And what kind of, was it the middle toes?
Yeah, it's the second and the third.
And so what, you just... broke him and
he just fought.
Just, I walked it off, man.
He sent me a picture, so he was in a hospital. They were trying to fit him into a moon boot, and he's like, the nurse is going, you're not going to be able to fight. And Ben's like, in the back of my head, I'm going, yeah, yeah, sure, sweetie, whatever.
Yeah.
No worries.
Yeah, rest, ice compression. Fuck that.
Well, mine wasn't that bad. Oh, actually, it probably is. It's obviously a little bit bad. I actually snapped the ligaments in my foot, and the ligaments actually shortened. So what they had to do. I tore my plantar fascia as well.
Oh, that's a bastard.
I've had the plantar fascia. So I tore my plantar fascia. I also done my plantar plate. And then when
do
I
you have flat feet?
Flat feet. So I'm a typical Islander, really, really flat feet. So went and saw the surgeon. The surgeon said to me, goes, mate, we need do major surgery ASAP. So they ended up breaking my toes, shaving them down. So they broke three
toes.
They shaved three of my toes down.
Bone down.
Wow. Because the tendons wouldn't reach. So I had to shave them down, reattach three of the actual toes.
Yeah, right.
Did you go down a shoe size?
Well,
honest question, man.
That is. No, I didn't actually go down a shoe size, but it hurts now. Just to be honest,
maybe there's a segment for later on. Maybe we can do injury watch because I reckon I can top over everyone in this room with my.
You are talking about. You're up there as well, aren't you?
Yeah. I fractured C1 in 1988 with a spear tackle, which was
Rodney Howe got him.
I was in hospital. Marty Lane.
Yeah. What happened? Did it just fall downstairs at Mooseheads or?
The equivalent. No, and that's time in my life, the equivalent in Newcastle, because I'm a Newcastle boy, was a place called Fanny's, and there were no stairs. Wow. There were no stairs at Fanny's That's, nightclub.
Like an mate, I've been to Fanny's. I've been there.
Have you been to Fanny's?
Yes, I've been there.
Well, you know what I'm talking about.
It's Fanny.
Yeah. Mate, Fanny's. It's there no longer. It's where you used to find Joey Johns hanging from the roof with eyes like dish plates after he passed us. It was awesome. Oh, dear.
Didn't even know he had gums in because he was chewing his gums.
Oh, let's go back to the glory days of the Knights. Plenty more on the way tonight. Stick around. We're going to keep an eye because we do record this on Tuesday night. See you, Soliola, obviously, in at the NRL judiciary. So we'll keep an eye on that because we should get a decision very, very shortly on what's going on there. I think he'll be rubbed out for about 6 weeks just quietly.
Yeah, thank God you think like I think. I've been arguing with about four people this week. They're going, oh, he might get one.
Will that
two.
Be unprecedented?
Well,
for a guy not to get sent off and get 6 weeks.
Well, the guy that they've got represented him is the guy that got Jack Whiten off a couple of years ago before the Raiders semi-final. And Jack should have been gone for all money. So who knows what the Raiders have spent in Sia's defence. But we'll keep an eye on that. So that on the way and plenty more. And pretty sad week this week in music circles with Chester Bennington, the lead singer at Linkin Park. Committing suicide, he hung himself, and the story goes he was very good mates with Chris Cornell from Soundgarden. He sang Hallelujah, the Leonard Cohen classic, at Chris's funeral, and the day he killed himself was Chris Cornell's birthday. So it obviously just got a bit much for poor old Chester.
Six kids.
Yeah, it's pretty rough, isn't it? It's pretty rough.
I did want to tell a quick story about that. I haven't been to like many concerts in my life, and a lot sports being a big part of my life as opposed to music. But my younger brother was a massive fan of Linkin Park growing up.
Same here at the AIS.
And no, we went down to Sydney. Yeah, what is now the 1-800 Scotty Masters Arena or whatever it is.
Kratos Bank or whatever it is. Yeah.
Whatever it is. But that was one of the only three or four concerts I've ever been to, was taking him on his 18th birthday to go see Linkin Park. And Chester put on a great show that day. So for all the music lovers out there and the people who were touched by him, it's a very, very sad story.
Yeah,
you can probably see a bit of that with his music over the years, the way it's
it gives you a whole different perspective on his lyrics this week.
Oh, absolutely. And especially coming from like that new metal sort of era where a lot of that stuff just came and went real fast. But Linkin hung around, man. They had some awesome songs.
Well, they got Michael Bay and the Transformers movies to thank for that, because they've been in every Transformers movie. Yeah.
But even you look back, and especially now, as Pales just said, some of the lyrics are so poignant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always the way in hindsight. They got four albums back in the top 10 as well, which is no doubt going to help his kids.
It was his stepdad. Yeah. That's what did it all, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Like,
yeah.
From what I heard, it was like a case of sexual abuse from his stepfather.
Yeah, when he was a young kid. So anyway, we thought we'd play a couple of Linkin Park songs on the podcast tonight. So let's get stuck into the first one. This is What I've Done. It is Season 2, Episode 7. The Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast. Scotty, Ben, Stevie and Sayer, thanks to The Butcher Shop.
Alibi, 'cause I've drawn regret from the tree.
park with what I've done. This is the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast. I'm Benny E with Scotty M, Stevie P, and Saya F.
Our special guest tonight in the studio with us, which is great. It's great to have him here.
Indeed. Now, Stevie, you've lined this one up, having Saya here, and of course, Brumby's legend, Wallaby's legend.
Queanbeyan legend.
Let's not bring up the Queensland Reds.
come on, boys. Come on. Don't be like that.
On the way to the London Irish. Stevie, you've made this chat happen tonight for us, so mate, take it away, my friend.
Thank you very much, boys. Look, it's an absolute pleasure to have Saya Fainga in with us. Good friend of mine growing up. We went to primary school together. And then after that, Saya went off to play, basically went to St. Edmunds and then played for them in what was a star-studded rugby career after that.
I just want to butt in one sec there, Stevie. Sorry. Saya, did he wear suits to school? In primary school,
we've
did
never
he wear
seen
suits?
Anything else.
Actually, it was either school uniform or tracky dacks and the good old Adidas, but full Adidas kit, you know?
Well, boy.
What style?
Yeah. The full Adidas kit. It was nice. Pretty amazing.
Awesome.
Nothing's changed, sort of.
Nothing at all.
Double up, man.
Yeah, first of all, so it's great to have you in here, Saya. Obviously, a legend for not only the Brumbies, the Queensland Reds, and Australia. You know, so many Wallabies caps, you and your brother as well. One of only three sets of twins to play for Australia as well. The first since the Ella brothers as well back in the 70s and 80s. So fantastic achievements, mate. If you don't mind, we'll start from the top. Tell us about your days starting off. You started with the Queanbeyan Kangaroos, first of all, playing rugby league from, you know, age 5 and 6, and probably even from that stage as well, you were bigger than, you know, most boys your age and running over people. I remember watching you play rugby as a kid. It was a sight to behold. So tell us a bit about how it all started for you. You started with the Kangaroos and then from there, you know, developing into rugby, playing for Queanbeyan and going through your school days.
Yeah, I suppose for me, a lot of people don't know this, but I actually got coached by Matty Giddo's father.
Yeah,
so
right.
From when I was 9 years old to...
Oh, Ronnie.
Ronnie Giddo. So he was one of my mentors when I was growing up. He was very hard on that. And, I suppose it paid off. And we obviously played with him for 11, 12s and 13s for Queanbeyan Roos and Blues. So obviously that. And then we went to St. Edmunds College. And my big mentor, even still to this day, is Pat Lantry. He was a pretty amazing guy.
Mate, he's spoken about in circles by Hawkey, by the Duros brothers, by everyone. Mr. Langtree, he's a famous name in ACT rugby and
most,
in St. Eddie's.
Most Queanbeyanites or most Eddie's people or most Australian, he's still an Australian selector, would know exactly who he is. But, you know, he's given us a great opportunity, gave us a great platform to actually start our career. And it was very hard on me. I remember one time, you know, I'd played for Australia when I was 16, and then the following year I thought, yep, you know what, I'm going to be playing for Australia again. Yep, sure enough. I went into the – we didn't even start pre-season. You go, so if your line-out's not straight, mate, I'm not going to select you. And that's for the
school
team. Give
it to you straight up. Yeah.
And I was like, what about Australia? He goes, just worry about playing for St. Edmunds, mate.
That's good advice, though. That is good advice.
So then I was outside every day, throwing it at a brick wall. So, never stopped, so, which is good. So, you know, for me, at the end of the day, it's all about, you know, practice and hard work. And obviously, like yourself, Ben, you know, nothing comes easy. And what you do is, you know, hard work always pays off from skill.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Especially when your work ethic meets your natural talent.
Yeah.
You're going to go all the way, man.
Tell us about those Eddie's days quickly, Saya. You guys were in such a dynamic team there, obviously you and your brother, and you guys were going, you're telling us some great stories the other day about how you're getting kicked out of the Waratah Shield competition against all the Sydney teams because you just rolled them over so consistently. That's how good you guys were. Tell us about those days coming up, you know, through the rugby system in Canberra and Sydney and just being so good.
Well, it actually first started when we were, I think, 12, and we actually got kicked out of our own age group. So
that's ridiculous. Parents,
were you already playing up at the time?
Yeah, so parents actually called up and said, parents called up
these
and said that
up.
We wouldn't
bring back,
we're not going to actually play.
Did you used to weight limit in the day? Yeah.
Well, I used to have to take my birth certificate when I played league in Newcastle because I was a foot taller than everyone when I was 13 and 14.
Really?
Yeah. Same deal. But I know that's a lot, but you guys got booted for that.
Yeah, so we actually, they said that we'd, you know, we're obviously from Ireland, like we're obviously Islanders.
Yep.
But they didn't realise that my mum was blonde hair, blue eyes, and from Yass. So, And it's pretty embarrassing when your mum pulls up and you give her a hug and they're like, oh, who's that? That's actually my mum, mate. Yeah. So we obviously went to Eddie's in year seven and got, the principal and the head coach and, you know, they all sat down with us and said, you know, you've got to move up a year. So then we ended up playing 2 years up. And then Anthony was the youngest person ever to play for the first 15. So he was at age 14 playing first 15.
13, 14,
against 18-year-olds. That's crazy. We started playing. Then we got selected in the Brumbies Academy.
Yep.
And then I suppose, leading on to that, we both played for Australia, but not only that, the teams that we had, the people that we had going to school, we had Tyrone Smith, George Smith's younger brother, we had Matt Guido, we had there was a legacy before us, and that legacy led on to, I suppose, for us, a legacy of not losing. Mm. And, all I wanted to do was win, and it was like if you didn't win, then, you kind of let down that legacy before. And it was at the stage when, I think I was 13 years old and I was like, I want to play for the first 15 and that's going to make me the person, to leave my kind of legacy. Mm-hmm. And I think, going back to training now, everyone goes, oh, the Fianca twins, how good. And I feel like I've left that legacy for other guys.
Absolutely.
So when they compete, they do it. So
that's brilliant. Having, knowing that those kids coming through will always want to live up to what you guys achieved and being that best first 15 team, that the Waratah Shield potentially has ever seen over the years as well, which is great.
But in saying that, I didn't think we lost for 10 years before that either. So, so 3 years of my legacy doesn't really mean jack compared to the other, the other 7 years that the guys did. But it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
No, that's right. So you had a great moment there, obviously going through all of the school days as well. From there, say you progressed out of school, and then from there, tell us about how you got selected the Australia Under-19s, I believe it was, where you guys went. You captained us winning the World Cup. That was in Dubai, 2006, and your brother was vice captain as well. So another.
So Under-19s were you? Yeah. Were you 15?
Yeah. Well, no. Depending on what certificate you're going on. If it was my Islander certificate or my Queanbeyan certificate. Yeah. I'd actually, it's quite ironic actually. I was playing Super Rugby. I was actually playing for the Brumbies.
Yeah.
And I was in, I made my debut.
In Cape Town against the Stormers?
I was in Cape Town. I was in Cape Town living the dream, thought I was a mad rock star.
Still does.
I got there and I was just like, this is unbelievable. How good's this? So I went to obviously Cape Town, experienced it, first line out, not straight. 20 minutes, Laurie Fisher.
First ref calls.
Not straight. Laurie Fisher still had faith. Put me on for 20 minutes, had Jeremy Paul as one of my mentors.
Yeah,
right. The names.
And then, then after that, got on a plane, came straight back, went to Coffs Harbour, and all the boys were in camp. And then, obviously, got the opportunity to captain the team.
Yep.
We went to Dubai, and then we actually were the first team ever to win the 19s. And, not the biggest achievement in my life was, obviously, at that point, was obviously winning it. But the team that we had, you can look at the players now. We had David Pocock, we had Lockie Turner, we had Christian Leofana, we had Anthony. We had some pretty big names, but at that time, no one really knew them. We had Ben Daly. So all these players that were very successful now are still playing. And, I think that was it was a great time. And we all loved it over there. And we all, and I think that, not only did we have a great team and great superstars, but we actually had a great culture.
Yeah, nice. I just want to just jump forward in the timeline a little bit at the moment, Steve. You bring up that culture and the players you're around at the time and the history with the Brumbies. Where do you see the Brumbies need to improve? I mean, you had an elimination quarterfinal the other night. We had 9,000 people there. What are the Brumbies got to do to get the crowds back in Canberra?
We had a big conversation today about it with the CEOs of the Brumbies, and we actually talked about it. And I think for us, Canberra is the most successful franchise
absolutely
in Australia.
Absolutely, it is. Yep.
And, the Canberra community always support us, but it's just the members.
Yep.
We need to change our demographic. We need to change either the media hub. We either need to change the way that we look at rugby or the way that people want to come out in the cold.
Yeah.
And I know it's different between the Raiders and obviously the Brumbies, but when the Raiders are winning, you know, the market gets flooded.
Everyone's there, that's right.
Canberra crowds are fickle.
You know,
they are fickle.
But then you can say they're fickle, but in saying that, the Brumbies always make the finals.
Yeah.
And you still get the 9,000.
Yeah.
You know, the most disappointing thing for me is that Christian Leofano.
Yeah, I know.
This was the story, wasn't it?
Yeah,
yeah, it
and,
was. Yep.
You know, how do you get a person like him who's faced leukemia?
Yep.
Who's playing in a semi-final for his, you know, or quarter-final, and no one, like, not even an extra 500 or 1,000 people turn up?
Yeah.
You know, for me, that's pretty disappointing. And to see him train as hard as he do, you know, he's always wearing a hat because he does, you know, he's obviously lost his hair.
Yep.
You know, for me, he had the, you know, he's just an amazing person.
Mm. People are always looking for a storyline, but they just haven't latched onto it.
Yeah, so. And, you know, like, he didn't want to be in the media.
Not enough exposure.
There was plenty of exposure about Christian coming back and the
just
battles
in, just
he's
in
had
rugby
over.
Circles or
no,
mainstream
I mean,
as
you,
well?
You saw it on social media. You saw it on the local news gets behind it and stuff like that. I mean, there was plenty of stories about it. And I mean, his battle with leukemia was a pretty big story as well. So you're right, Saya. The fact that we got 9,000 people to that game on Friday night is pretty disappointing.
How big of an issue is it, though, in your opinion, Saya, the Super Rugby competition in itself? I remember Super Rugby always being so successful when it was Super 12.
Yes.
We talked about this the other week. Yes. Three Aussie teams, five Kiwi teams, four South African teams, all very, very competitive. Even Super 14 was still very good when they expanded Australia, they expanded South Africa as well. But it almost feels like now they've expanded too quickly. And we've had some great chats recently about Australian rugby and where we think it's falling over. Mm. But do you think that's, you know, how much of an impact has the Super Rugby expansion had on the dwindling numbers and the fact that you've got, in Canberra especially, a resurgence from the Raiders in the last few years and that sort of issue affecting it?
Well, everyone has their own opinion, I guess, on, you know, what's the best outcome for Super Rugby. And for me, I think the best outcome is if we're going to get rid of a team or if we do hold on to a team, why don't we get 10 players that we can have foreigners and so we can employ guys like Sonny Bill, you know, Mornay Stain, you know. We can employ...
Yes, get the big names to play for our teams.
You know, we can get the English, you know, we can get big names from England. We can get big names from Ireland or wherever.
Yep.
Put them in the Super Rugby teams. We don't just need up and coming players, but we can get celebrities, pay them their salary, that they're out of the salary cap, and then, you know, not only that, we diversify from what I suppose this Australia community see week in, week out. You know, imagine having Sonny Bill play
something
for...
new, something fresh.
Yeah. You know, imagine Sonny Bill playing for the Brumbies. How many more people would come?
Heaps. That's bums
then
on
you,
seats.
Then you
that's
might right. finally get more, a fight you know, with him, Benny.
Yeah.
Just straight out of there. I just jumped the fence at the...
but like even like Mornay Stain playing for the Western Force, you know. Yeah. I think for me personally, like, you know, there'd be a lot more South Africans there.
Yeah.
You know, you know, you could pick any of them New Zealand players, the Whitelock brothers, going to Queensland. Or,
absolutely.
You know, and I think for me personally, I think that would change a whole demographic of rugby in Australia because you look at France, you know, their actual, you know, their national team hasn't decreased.
Yep.
Like
they're still a quality side, aren't they? Hard to beat on their day.
Exactly. They're still a very, very quality team.
That's right.
And they have so many foreigners from out of the country. Everyone's getting paid. Their TV rights have gone up to the billions now because they're employing...
they're getting their players from all over the world.
Yeah. But also, you know, they're supplying a great product that people want to watch.
Yeah.
And if you're supplying a great product that people want to watch, then you're going to get the attendance. You're going to get the people that want to come and see it week in, week out.
And that's what the top 14, isn't it, really? You look at the French top division, the top 14, the way that they have their promotion system, their relegation system. And when we go forward in time and ask you about London Irish shortly, you know, they've just come up from, you know, Division 1. They've come up now into the Premiership. So they're in a position where they're going to bring in a whole new breed of fans as well, a whole new derby. For example, their first game of the next season against Harlequin. So local derby there in London. You're going to have that new and found interest there straight up. So it's a big deal. Going back to I want to talk about when you guys won that Super Rugby title, 2011, with the Reds. And noting that you've just had this season with the Brumbies, do you see a massive difference in terms of the Super competition? Because I remember back then, the Reds were getting 40, 50,000 per game, filling up the stadium. Australian rugby was in a great place. You were part, and your brother, of the Tri-Nations winning squad, the first Tri-Nations winning squad for a very long time as well. And from there, you guys went on to play in the World Cup together. Is there a difference that you can see in the Super Rugby competition in terms of, you know, the quality of the teams that you're playing and the interest level as well? I mean, tell us about that year and how that went.
Yeah, well, I think obviously we were very lucky with that year. You know, all our star players, you know, Quade, Digby, we had a very successful team.
Genia, Rod Davies, fantastic side.
Everyone was playing well. And to Ewan McKenzie's credit, you know, he coached the team that he had. He knew that Quade wasn't the greatest tackler.
Yeah.
So why put him in the front line? Save him up. He's the best he is the best attacker in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Put him at fullback. Let him attack. Yes. Let him do what he's good at.
Yeah.
You know, put Anthony
and put Anthony and you guys there.
Anthony loves to defend. Bo Robinson loves to defend.
Yep.
Get the guys that are good at what they do. Put him in the front line to bash blokes. So for us, and to be honest, you know, the reason why I think we won it and why we were so successful, I guess, is because we've played in between our strengths. So for that team.
Yep.
And I think the following year, whenever the Tars won it, you know, the Tars
couple played, of years later,
yeah, who cares?
When the Waratahs won it, they played to their strength. They had big bodies.
Yeah.
They played, you know, they played in between their structures where their big men didn't have to run too far.
That's it.
And, you know, what the team could.
It's the same
capable.
As fighting, though, man. You just got to use what you got. Because every heavyweight, everyone wants to fight like bloody Mike Tyson. But if you're not a short guy for your weight division, that style's not going to work for
you.
So yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Use the bodies with you got that you have the way they're supposed to be used.
Yeah.
And, you know, like probably like my biggest point is, you know, if you look at, I suppose, all the teams now in Super Rugby, you know, we probably shouldn't have been in the finals. We've got no big names. You look at every other team. Every other team you can probably say has a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
Who do we have? Oh, we've got Henry Spate. We have, you know what I mean?
Names that don't roll off the tongue.
Yeah, exactly.
They used to be exactly right. So when it comes to the Brumbies and even the Reds in that year.
Before they had David Pocock, you could say, you know, Stephen Moore, you've got all these big names. You know, like, you know, we've got Sam Carter and all these guys, Rory Arnold. We've got, you know, we do have Wallabies, but it's not like the
household names.
Well, it's not like the Queensland Reds. You can go, oh, yeah.
You could name 1 to 15 almost back then as well. James Horwell as well there. Australian captain was in there. Yeah. It was such a great side.
You look at Queensland now, you know, Stephen Moore, you've got George Smith, you've got, you know, so many, Quade Cooper. You've got all these names just rolling off the tongue. All these superstars.
Two ex-Brumbies and a bloke that fights fat kids.
Exactly.
Some fat kids can fight, man.
Case in point.
I'm leading the fucking vanguard.
That's interesting points that you make. So what it does say to us is that, you know, you look at what happened with the Brumbies this season, and a good point you just mentioned is if you actually look at the ladder based on points and points solely, the Brumbies were miles behind like the Hurricanes, who they even played on the weekend anyway. You've got these Kiwi teams and the Lions, who actually won the comp outright this year. I mean, they hosted a final, and rightly so, but why don't the Hurricanes on the flip side of that get that home final? It's because of this system of rewarding the conferences, and because the Brumbies came first in their conference, that's not really is it? It's a real strange one. So.
Good for the Brumbies, but
good for them. Yeah. But like you just said, when you're not getting the crowd there and getting the support that they're used to, that's where the problem lies.
Yeah, that's true. That's
quickly true. On that World Cup year, you can tell us a bit about that experience. Say, obviously, going there with your brother. Your brother started the semi-final there against New Zealand. That was probably—is it fair for me to say that was your most successful year, winning the Super Rugby title, winning the Tri-Nations, and then from there going to the World Cup in New Zealand? What a great experience that must have been—the peak of your career, really.
Yeah, mate, we went back to back. You know, World Cup. You know, winning a championship, playing a test match with a twin, you know, all your dreams come true.
Absolutely.
You know, there's not many times you can say, you know, when you're a little kid, oh, I want to play with my twin brother, I want to play in the Wallabies jersey. Yeah. You kind of make it up, it's kind of surreal.
What about the Wallabies, Mr. Langtree?
only if you line out to strike.
They're all taking the piss out of me. And then, couple of years later that I actually fulfilled that role
and
get to play with my twin. And, you know, a lot of people doubted us and we had a lot of haters on the way, but, you know, it all come to fruition. And I think for us, the biggest thing was we obviously made our debut against the All Blacks. And the biggest thing was, you know, we're sitting there crying. We're just...
Back in 08, you're talking about your debut, your first debut.
Debuted together. And we're kind of sitting there going, you know what, like, how lucky are we, twin brothers, to debut against Australia, to debut against New Zealand, to watch the haka together. You know, it's a pretty amazing thing. And for both of us, we were just kind of starstruck because, you know, I was holding my best mate next to me and we're about to play a test match against the best team in the world.
Yeah.
And so, you know, obviously that came, you know, to leading into 2011 where, you know, we were playing the best teams, we were going out, we were training hard, we were just hungry.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was obviously myself, Anthony, Will Genya and Radiki Semo. So you probably didn't really miss us. So a 6'8" guy with a big afro, an overweight guy with dreadlocks, a small little dark fella,
and then his twin brother is the best looking man in Queensland.
And then a guy thinks he walks, every time he walks out, he has to wear a collared shirt. he thinks he's a supermodel. So, you know, for us, you know, it was pretty hard to go out. So,
I hope he's watching this.
Yeah. So it was pretty hard to do stuff. But in saying that, it was definitely the best time in my life in my rugby career.
Mm-hmm.
But in saying that, like, you know, the journey to London, you know, it's a new beginning. And for me personally, like, it's kind of like a new, I suppose, new journey.
Absolutely.
And a new kick in the ass to say, you know what, like, let's win a Heineken Cup. Let's win. Yeah.
Absolutely. Let's win a Viva Premiership. You know, absolutely.
These are my aspirations now.
Yep.
You know, my whole goal before was to win a Super Rugby and play for the Wallabies.
Yep.
Now it's to win a Heineken Cup.
Absolutely.
And win a championship.
Go play Toulon away from home in a European Cup match and all that sort of stuff.
You know, like
Leicester Tigers. Yeah. All these great teams that grace the European game. That's right. So tell us about that. Like, what are you expecting in terms of the game, you know, the physicality of it, and obviously the conditions will be different as well when you go and hit that deep winter in November, December, you know, the short days and the cold nights. What are you expecting ahead of this next adventure?
It sounds like Canberra.
Yeah.
Man, it's funny you say that because they reckon it gets dark.
Oh, so about it gets 3 in the arvo.
Yeah, 3 in the arvo. Yeah. And
sun comes up at 10.
So that's going to be awesome. But my wife thinks it's going to be awesome over there. But in saying that, you know, I know it's
definitely London's a great city. She'll love it there, Alicia. It's a great city. I mean, there's plenty going on. You know, I hear you're going to get a season ticket with Arsenal as well, which is fantastic. So, tell us a little bit about what you're expecting and how you think that's going to go.
I definitely know it's going to be a lot heavier. The ground's going to be a lot heavier. You know, longer studs, you know. It's going to be bigger contacts. They're going to be bigger bodies, than obviously Super Rugby. Everyone's a little bit more fitter. We're a lot more offloads, you know. But in saying that, moving over there, it's going to be a lot more, you know, straight line guys just kind of bashing it. And I like contact. So it's going to be
that front row battle is going to be hard. The ruck's going to be hard. Yep. And especially in those wet conditions as well. Yep.
That wet, wet condition rugby. And
suits you to a T though, doesn't it? Really? Clearing out, in you go again.
Sidestep this.
If I don't really tell this much, but if I didn't touch a ball once in a game, I'd be pretty happy if I could only just tackle
just
people.
Just clean out and tackle.
Just clean out and tackle, I'd be pretty happy with that.
Yeah.
But in saying that, I don't mind running the ball a little bit. So, but, you know, like it's an exciting journey because I actually don't know what I'm in for. So, like, traveling to, you know, the south of France, traveling to, you know, Toulon, Toulouse.
That's it.
You know, playing...
Traveling to Dublin, all these great places.
Playing Scotland, playing Ireland, playing in the middle of London.
In Northern England, that's going to be some great games.
You know, when we get over there, the 2nd of September, we've got a double header. They reckon it's nearly sold out at Twickenham.
Twickenham, that's the opening round of the season when you come up against Harlequins. You know, that's brilliant.
Reckon nearly 100,000 people.
And the Pommy crowds with the singing and stuff. Yeah, it'll be another level for you.
And the only time I've ever played there is with the Wallabies. And it's quite funny because...
You told us, I think I know what you're going to say here.
We were there training. We're doing our captain's run. And there was all these... Like, you know, I think it holds 100,000, 110,000 seats and people, sorry. And there was all these white things on the seat. And I'm like, surely there's something, you know, what is this? Is it napkins or what is it? So I'm looking around. I'm going, stuff it. I'm going to jump the fence and have a look. And there was these flags. So they had all these English flags on every single seat. And I'm thinking, geez, like how much money, even if it costs you a dollar per seat, that's $110,000
on flags.
Wasted on flags. If you're an Aussie fan.
At the time he's thinking.
Yeah. But, you know, in saying that, you know, they love their rugby. And I was just amazed. Like, you know, we walked, obviously when we ran out, there was all these white flags. It was just absolutely amazing to play in that kind of capacity. So for me personally, I'm biting at the bit to actually start and start getting out there and getting amongst it.
Nice. Yes.
Fantastic, nice. Mate. That's brilliant. So the last few years have, you know, you've played in Queensland, you've come back down to Canberra and all that sort of stuff. Just a quick one, how much are you going to, you know, miss your family and all that sort of stuff? And if you don't mind me asking, it's been a bit of a tough year for you, you know, with your father passing away, Big Sayer, who was so fond to all of us, you know. I remember Big Sayer from my first days at Oddbod's gym, he'd be in there scoring us and calling us weak as piss. Get out of our weights, boys! You know, he was such a great man, and I know how much you loved him, obviously, and the effect that it's had on your family, you know. What's it going to be? I mean, probably a bit of a silly question, but, you know, noting that you did lose your father this year, how are you expecting to find it over there, you know, without the support of your family, potentially not coming back for 2 to 3 years to see your family and all the boys and everyone around you?
Way to sell it for him, Steve.
Thanks for reminding us.
And the weather's shit.
I don't really know. No. You know, personally, you know, it's been a tough, not only this year, but the last 2 years with injuries, you know, breaking ribs, you know, not making 2015 World Cup, fingers, you know, broken hand.
Benny. The walking wounded.
Yeah, facing adversity at the forefront. And then obviously this year with my grandmother having cancer, you know, Nellie passing away as well. Then obviously my father passed away from a mosquito bite, out of all things. So, you know, it is going to be tough, but, you know, I've got good support. And I suppose more importantly, you know, I think, you know, going overseas to London, I think it's going to be a real eye-opener for me personally. To say, you know what, that I've moved on. I'm kind of, you know, I've got to come back for a year anniversary.
Yeah.
And that's in the Tongan tradition. You always have to come back in a year and put the headstone on. So I'm definitely coming back in a year. But more importantly, you know, it's just been a tough year just in general. So, you know, with all these injuries and everything, so I'm kind of happy that I'm going. And
looking forward to it.
But the one thing I can actually say that has been a positive is that the Brumbies have been probably
very supportive, haven't they?
The biggest supporters.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Stephen Larkham, you know.
I remember seeing him there at your father's funeral when we went off your dad, and he was there. It was a great gesture.
Yeah. And Michael, the CEO, and we've got a liaison officer, Robin, they've just been absolutely amazing. And without their support this whole year, and even all the players, you know, every single player sent me a message when we were over in Tonga. And to think that, you know, I was supposed to leave to go to play the Crusaders on the Wednesday morning.
That's right.
I had all my bags packed, and then I was packing to go to New Zealand, and then I end up packing to go to Tonga, and hearing it in the morning. So it was very, very heartbreaking. You know, I was supposed to go to one country, and I ended up in another country. So for me, you know, it's going to be good to get away. And you know, it's pretty hard to walk around in Queanbeyan without someone knowing my father or someone knowing you. Yep. And, you know, like I said, you know, and always say, being overweight with dreadlocks, you don't get missed anywhere. And that's probably my only claim to fame. And everyone goes, oh, mate, just shave your hair, no one will know you. And then I'll go, yeah, well, then I'll be the fat twin.
Which one are you?
So, are you Sarah Anthony? Well, I've got the long hair, so I'm Sarah. Yeah. Or would you rather say, oh, mate, you know. Oh,
fat dude with the shaved head.
He's got long hair. Oh, that's Sarah. So I've kind of weighed up my odds, and I kind of rather know. I'd rather, you know, the dreadlocks. So, in saying that, you know, it's going to be good to get away and start from, you know, start with fresh. A fresh
slash. Good,
and,
good, mate. Good.
The coach, Nick Kennedy, over there has been absolutely amazing. And, you know, he's offered me a contract, and he you know, they've obviously put me as one of their, you know, star players. And all I want to do is impress them. And I just want to get back in.
That's right, repay the faith.
Yeah, I just want to, actually get in there and start playing, but consistently rugby and start repaying the debt that they've invested in me.
Yeah, nice.
Brilliant, mate.
Very nice.
Before we let you go, Sayer, I need to ask you about something that we had a good laugh about on the weekend. Now, you guys may not have known this. It's not a greatly known fact, but Sayer had an appearance once on Brotown, you know, the Kiwi cartoon show.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yep, yeah. I do know the show.
So if you
and
don't
these
mind...
idiots don't believe me. So we've been trying
this,
to Google
this is
right?
One of the great stories. We've got to get this out there for all the boys in Queen Bee, yeah. Canberra.
So all these idiots tried to YouTube it. We couldn't find it. So then they don't believe me. So I'm actually going to call up Brotown, the owner, or the director,
yeah.
And get the information so I can show these poor, simple fools. Even though I wasn't even a cartoon, but I was on. So how it come to fruition is that we're on the bus. We're going on the World Cup. So we're in the World Cup. I was on the bus and we're heading over, I don't know, somewhere to, I think it was to the plane or something. And They were saying how many islands we actually had in the World Cup, in the World Cup squad. And I was like, you know, there's probably 10 out of the 30-man squad in the World Cup out of Islanders. And they're going, oh, yeah. So they started interviewing us and it was awesome. It was pretty amazing. And then they shared a video about this, you know, Brotown, which is obviously really big in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And then I told these idiots about it. And then they thought it would be pretty funny to take the piss out of me, not for half an hour, but for a whole hour. Oh, just wait. I've got to go. Actually, I've got to go see a cartoon. Actually, no. I'll go see Brotown. Actually, I forgot. You're in it. Like, you know, dickheads. Like,
just haters, mate. Just jealous.
Well,
there's no evidence.
Not yet, but
it's coming. Yeah. It is coming. Yeah. It is coming.
Yeah, man, it's coming, mate. Yeah. And then I'll show these idiots what it was. And then hopefully,
I believe you, man.
Yeah, thanks. So, yeah, well, you're the only one.
No, I'll put my hand up. All right. Yeah.
Hopefully someone here can tell. Hopefully one of you guys can show me. So
bring it back up. Oh, I had to do that one for the boys. Yeah, it was nice. A great laugh on Sunday talking about Brotown.
Very nice.
So.
Very nice. So, mate, thank you so much for coming in tonight, joining us on the podcast, and all the best for your time in London. Enjoy the... 3 p.m. sunsets, the 10 a.m. sunrises. You're going to love it.
Yeah. Well, thanks, guys, for having me. I really appreciate it. And looking forward to hopefully doing it by Skype or something. But
really appreciate
your time, guys. And good luck with everything.
Let us know when you're up there, mate, and you're going and everything's all set. And we'll sit down and get you through on a nice Skype interview. That'd be good.
Yeah. And hopefully get you some, I'll get used to some free tickets if you want.
I'll let you know on the day.
Yeah, just give me 2 days' notice or 2 hours' notice.
When you want it.
Yeah, but no, guys, thanks very much. And cheers.
Thanks very much, mate. All the very best. Obviously, Sayer heading off potentially tomorrow, it looks like, to go and start that next fantastic journey of his career. 3 years playing for London Irish up there in northwest London. And in amongst all of that, as we discussed the other day, you know, you've got things like the English Premiership over there. You'll have Wimbledon next year in the summer. You know, all of the great, you know, London's a fantastic city and you've been there before for the Wallabies, obviously, and Barbarians as well you've played for. So, you know, noting that you can be there permanently now on a day-by-day basis will be fantastic, mate. So all the very best. We all wish you the best of luck over there, mate. So good luck.
Cheers, guys.
The Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast is recorded in a bedroom.
In front of one very disinterested diamond python.
And occasionally a ginger cat called Alan.
Alan! Alan! Alan!
Oh, that's not Alan. Steve.
The Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast with Scotty, Ben and Steve.
Well, without the awesome crew from the Butcher Shop, Dixon and Kayleen, we wouldn't be able to bring you this little podcast every week. So we thank them profusely. I know it's fight fuel for you, Benny Edwards. You're into it. Have you been back? I know you've taken it easy the last couple of weeks because of the foot and stuff. Are you back into the fight?
Mate, food? I nearly didn't make it tonight because I'm anemic. Because I haven't been there.
Yeah, right.
Okay. I haven't been there and I'm feeling the effects, man.
Yeah, that's terrible.
I'm on a liquid diet as well.
Get those iron levels up, man. Come on.
I'm anemic, man.
You're anemic.
I need some Butcher Shop meat.
Yeah, that's what you need. And if you haven't tried the Butcher Shop, folks, everything is made fresh on the premises. They smoke their own bacon. Their chicken schnitzels are made fresh. And their sausages, lo and behold, they actually have meat in them, unlike the crap you buy at the supermarkets, which is pretty impressive stuff.
They're mostly anus.
What's that? The ones at the supermarkets?
I hope so.
No, I can guarantee you, this is a 100% guarantee, there is no anus in the Butcher
Minimal
Shop sausages.
Minimal anus.
No anus.
All right.
No anus.
Traces of anus may be found in this product.
Yeah, again, maybe at Woolies. Certainly not at the butcher shop. Dixon and Kayleen is where you want to go if you want to get yourself Canberra's best meat. Kayleen is open 7 days. Dixon is open 6 days. Get in there and get it down your neck.
The podcast you are listening to is all true.
Proving once again that the truth is not pretty. Just like its hosts.
The Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast with Scotty, Ben and Steve.
This is the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast with Scotty Masters, Benny Edwards and me, Stevie P. It's now time for your top five, Scotty.
Yeah, and the whole goal of this segment now is just to make Ben be proud of me. Because apparently in the last 2 years I've done one good top five.
Proud son moment.
Proud son moment.
Coming here we go. I don't know. Have you guys heard about a reality TV show that's on at the moment? Because I don't watch free to wear, but I came across it online,
free to wear?
So I went and had a look at it.
I haven't.
It's called Yummy Mummies. No. Have you seen it?
No? I haven't, but I'm sure my mummy will get onto it and I'll be forced to watch it.
Okay.
You reckon Duke Didier sent it?
Oh, he's seen a few Yummy Mummies. He's created a few.
I read about this hoo-ha online about this show, so I went back to because it's on Seven. So
is it just a MILF show?
No, it's about expectant mums. Okay, so what it is, it follows wealthy expectant mums who are trying to outdo one another in pre-birth rituals and bitching sessions. That's essentially what it is.
It's the what's
it's like,
it, what's
like it? The Hollywood Housewives kind
yeah,
of
Housewives
vibe,
of
but they're all pregnant,
oh,
right?
Okay.
So I went and had a look at this episode in question.
Hormonal
online.
And pretentious.
Yeah, yeah, it's a winning combination, Penny. It's fantastic.
I've been there, done that.
Yeah, yeah. There was an episode two weeks ago about breastfeeding in public, and now I don't see a problem with breastfeeding.
Free the boob, man.
Yeah, I don't care. But anyway, you can tell that this was all set up by the production team. They basically had two. This woman sat there, got a boob out, was feeding a kid, and one of the birds on the show and her mother were sitting there, and they were just going off. Boobs are supposed to be a sexual thing. Taking them out in public takes the womanly part of your boobs away. That was the direct quotes from this show.
The womanly part?
Yeah, apparently. Breastfeeding is unwomanly. Isn't it the most womanly thing you can do?
They're a functional...
Yeah, that's right.
That and giving birth?
Yeah, that's right. It's just ridiculous. But what do you expect from reality TV?
This will be good.
It's just terrible stuff. It reminds me, the only thing that weirds me out about breastfeeding is when you see kids that are like 9 who are still there. Because 60 Minutes did a story on that last
Where'd
year.
Where'd you
see
that? Downtown Queanbeyan.
60 Minutes. No. Mate, Riverside Plaza's a classic. No,
Charwood Shops.
There was this one kid
Don't
on that
Don't bring me
show.
Into this.
There was one kid on 60 Minutes episode. He was 9 years old.
Was the mum hot?
No, Ben.
No, that's rude. That's fucked up.
But anyway, I just... 9-year-olds breastfeeding, it got me thinking of this.
And now... It's another Give Yourself an Uppercut.
Top 5.
Yeah, it's the top 5 signs your child is too old to breastfeed.
This should be good.
So this
should be good, Benny.
I'm already.
Smiling
yeah,
already.
Yeah, he is. This could be number 2.
Coming in at number 5, she asks if you can hold her iPhone during lunch.
That's all right. Come on.
I laugh, man.
What do you call that?
That was good, man.
I thought that was all right.
Number 4, your birth control pills interfere with his acne. Coming in at number 3 in the top 5 signs your child is too old to breastfeed, his secretary just called and asked if he can reschedule for 11:45. Number 2, the driving instructor says you're going to have to unlatch during the test. And number 1, there's the drum roll. Number 1 in the top 5 signs your child is too old to breastfeed.
Oh, here we go.
Beard abrasions.
Pass rash on the tit.
You're listening to the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast.
Thanks to the Butcher Shop, Dixon and Kayleen.
He's put more people to sleep in the ring than you've had hot dinners. He's faced the biggest and meanest dudes on the planet.
Another dramatic finish here as Ben Edwards comes from behind. Wow!
So now it's time for Ben's Biff-a-rama.
That's insane in the membrane.
All right, Benny, take it away, my friend.
Well, let's start off with UFC on Fox 25, headlined by Chris Weidman versus Kelvin, not Kevin, Gastelum in Long Island, New York at the Nassau Coliseum in Uniondale. Now, Chris Weidman's obviously from Baldwin, New York. His last 2 fights have been in New York.
Yep.
And he got his head kneed off by Yoel Romero.
He did.
And then a very weird stoppage loss to Gegard Mousasi, which is more as a bit of a funny finish there, more of a technicality. So Third time lucky in New York for Chris. It was actually 16 kilometers from his home. He was coming off a three-fight losing streak after winning 13 straight, including three title defenses. So he actually won it, finally won at home with a round three arm triangle against the Ultimate Fighter 17 winner in Kelvin Gastelum. Now, Kelvin had success early, dropped Weidman with a massive left hand, lefty versus righty matchup at the end of round one, but Weidman was super fit, recovered very quickly, took control with his wrestling in the next two rounds and got the sub in the third. Now, Gastelum commented that Weidman just felt so strong, and he hinted at going back down to lightweight again. Now, he's chopped and changed between lightweight and welterweight and middleweight his whole career. I think he's one of those dudes that just stuck in between a weight division, like Rich Franklin.
Yeah.
He wasn't quite a 205, he wasn't quite a 185, a 195 would have been perfect.
It's like me, I'm stuck between You're Kidding and No Chance.
And in the middle there's a chance. So I think he's one of the ones that about 80 kilos, 81 kilos would be good for him. But Weidman was pretty pumped up after a win, understandably so. Have a listen to him talking at the press conference.
And I guess now, what do you want? Do you want Bisping next? Or
I want what the people want. You know, I know I'm the best in the world. Bisping has been running. He did a great job. He got the belt when I gave him the opportunity to get the belt. Before that, he never had an opportunity to even fight for the belt. I gave him that shot. And then since then, he hasn't fought anybody that was a number one contender. He's been running. He's got injuries. I don't know what he's doing. I'm the champ. I'm the best guy in the world. And I think people know that. And if Bisping grows some balls, that fight will happen. I know Whitaker just did a great job winning the interim belt, but I think he's hurt. He's got knee surgery. I'm available. I'm ready to go. We'll see what happens.
So, yeah, he's pretty pumped up and calling out the British bump, Bisping.
He's going to have to wait, isn't he? He's going to have to wait after Whitaker.
Well, Whitaker's got to get surgery. He's not going to fight till next year.
Yeah, okay.
So Bisping just had minor surgery as well. So Bisping might be ready in 3 or 4 months. So there is a possibility that. But I don't think.
How does that work with an interim belt,
I don't think they're going to give Weidman a shot. Coming off, it's only had one win out of his last three.
Plus, he doesn't have the interim belt. They couldn't do that.
Well, there is a possibility that GSP could be coming in for that super fight, and
Been the biggest load of crap, though, hasn't it, Benny? And we talked about this, about how much it's affected that division as well, and everything that's going on with Bisping. It's a joke.
I think a big part of it's to do with the UFC losing so many superstars. Like Ronda's gone. She's
WWE. She's talking WWE now.
Conor McGregor's. Oh, she's been a hardcore WWE.
Oh, I know she loves it, but
she was at WrestleMania. It was awesome.
I hadn't heard rumors she's actually in talks.
I saw the tabloids yesterday saying that she's in talks to go into WWE now. Yeah,
yeah, not surprised there. But I said, mate, the only one left is Conor McGregor. He's the only superstar.
Yeah,
even Anderson Silva, he's always sort of been broken a bit. He's like, what's he, 41 or something now? So
they can probably do a little bit with sorry to interrupt. The heavyweight champ. Oh, his name's just escaping.
Stipe
Miocic. Surely they can do something with him. I reckon he's a superstar.
He's a gun.
He's a fireman as well, isn't he?
Yeah, full time. Full time.
It writes itself.
Yeah, he's working class, man.
Yeah, he is. But if he wins again, it'll be the longest winning streak ever in heavyweight history, won't it?
Oh, mate, he's been flatlining people, but that's not enough these days. You've got to have something outside of the cage. Like, he's such a clean cut, hard working,
that Lesnar type of thing.
Yeah. He doesn't.
That's why Ben's working on his hip hop dancing now. So when he gets in. There'll be that something extra.
I got the pimp limp.
Mate, there's a great fighter who fights in UFN in Sydney. His name's Alex Gorgies. His nickname is the Hitman. He's about 4 or 5-0 now as a pro. He's fantastic. He goes in there and he's famous for like twerking sometimes. He'll go in there and do mid-fight and just have a bit of a twerk and then slap someone and knock him
mid-fight.
Out. He's mid-fight. He's fantastic, mate. I'll put you on him, Benny. You might see him in a few weeks' time, actually. He's Hollywood. I love him.
Twerk. I've got to work on my twerk. Get a grown ass.
He is actually mid-fight. It's up on like all over the internet. He loves it. Like he's done it mid-fight where he's turned around and put his bum out and just at the fighter. So
that's
protect yourself at all times.
Like, 1-2 twerk.
Yeah, he's got the 1-2 twerk. It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant.
That's asking to be knocked out.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I don't know how we go from twerking, but back to GSP. I'm pretty sure they would actually give GSP a shot. He's the longstanding, he's the most winning welterweight champion of all time. He's the best, unanimous. So I reckon it's going to play the waiting game and see what happens. How long Whitaker's going to be out for? How long Bisping's going to be out for? And if GSP can actually get through a training camp,
GSP comes through, wins the belt, Whitaker could be taking on him.
Yeah, and mate, he just beat two grapplers that are.
Yeah.
on par, if not better than GSP, and upper weight division, so much bigger man. I reckon Whittaker's got everyone's number there, especially Bisping. I reckon Bisping's the best matchup for Whittaker.
He just rode through the
two guys that are the worst matchup.
Yeah.
He's an absolute legend, so good for him. I think he's traded in the Navara. He's sponsored by Mercedes now.
Very nice.
So he's definitely moving up in the world.
Well, they're bringing out their ute very shortly, the new Mercedes ute.
Are they?
Yeah.
Well, like a four-wheel drive ute.
Yeah, there's a SUV ute coming out of Merck.
Oh, that'd be hot, wouldn't it?
Jesus Christ. Yeah. They've got one that looks like the bloody Batmobile, the G-something.
Yeah, I know the one. No, this thing's a lot more SUV-like, but a ute version of it, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's on the way.
Hook me up, Mercedes. UFC 214.
Are you listening?
The light heavyweight championship. It's had numerous delays due to Johnny Bones' drug suspension and doing hit and runs with pregnant chicks. We've all been there. Not really.
Just another day in the life.
So finally, Daniel Cormier versus John Jones. It is the biggest rivalry in UFC history.
They hate each other.
2.5 years in the making. It all started at UFC 182. Well, the first fight was at UFC 182 in January 2015.
It felt so long ago, didn't it?
Yeah,
it's been a very long 2.5 years, especially for John Jones. He won the unanimous decision, but there's so many variables going into this rematch. First of all, Johnny Bones' last fight against Overthen Poo. He's got a miss. OSP, let's call him OSP. That was 13 months ago, and it was 14 months since his fight with Daniel Cormier, and he was extremely rusty.
Yep.
So if he was rusty in that fight, which was 14 months after a DC fight,
it's
now another 13 months since. So ring rust could be a huge factor. It definitely is a factor for some people.
Yep.
There's not an exact science behind it, but it was obviously like a factor last time.
You know, so I know with me, it's a totally different thing, but if I don't pick up a guitar for a week, next time I pick it up, I'm slow. You've got to keep
it
up. Get
the cobwebs
in. Yeah, you do.
Absolutely. So, yeah, his arm, mate. Who knows what is going to happen here? The biggest variable, I've got to say, is obviously Jones has been out. DC's been active and fighting top world-class competition.
That's right.
But he's not a spring chicken anymore. He is probably coming to the end of his career. It wouldn't surprise me if he retired after
He'll end
this.
Up in commentary. He's making a fortune.
So that's what I'm saying. There's actually an avenue for him to walk out on.
That's right.
Money's not a problem
win
anymore.
Win this fight and say, see you, I'm done.
Exactly right. Yeah. So here's a bit of audio. The two guys had a bit of back and forth on the UFC on Fox show the other day. Have a listen.
Obviously, as I mentioned before, the hatred seems to have grown between you two. Is there any chance, though, 1 week from today that you guys end up earning each other's respect in the octagon and can squash this between you? John, I'd ask you that first.
DC.
Daniel?
I have no desire to be friends with him. In terms of respect for his abilities, sure, he's a great fighter. I've always said he's a great fighter. But every time going forward, we see each other, there's still going to be issues because either I'm going to smack him upside his head or something's going to happen. We're not going to be friends, and we're never going to be able to be in the same space because there will always be issues because he's a punk. You heard him. BC. He learned new language now or something. He can cuss in public. Good for you, John.
Well, gentlemen, 1 week from today, UFC 214, I speak for everybody. We cannot wait. Thank you so much for your time. Best of luck in your last week. Enjoy, and we will see you in the octagon.
There's genuine hatred there, isn't there?
And it's not going to change. It's not going to change at all. It's going to be like Misha Tate and Ronda after their fight. They're still just going to hate each other. It doesn't matter what happens.
It almost feels a little bit more genuine than the whole staged hate that McGregor and Mayweather have at the moment. I mean, they dislike each other, no doubt, but a lot of it's staged for the theatre of what it is. However, when you look at Cormier and DC, Cormier and John Jones, the way that they speak to each other is with real vitriol. They've just got real hatred, spite behind it.
Well, as they said in the audio, it doesn't matter what happens. Every time we run into each other, there's going to be problems. But what happened with the thing they met originally, how long ago? Probably 2010 or something. And Jones said to DC, oh, you know, I reckon I could take you down. And DC took that to heart, being an Olympian, and John Jones was his tall, skinny kid from Albuquerque. Didn't go down too well. They've actually got Jimmy Manoa on stand. They booked Jimmy Manoa a fight with Volkan Ozdemir, who's an absolute gun-like heavyweight. But just in case John Jones pulls out, they've got Jimmy Manoa.
Gets busted in a crack house.
Jimmy Manoa is going to get the call-up. So they've actually planned for Johnny Jones for Johnny Jones to fall through, as it's happened two times before.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Going to be,
it's going to be a good one to watch. It's going to be a good one to watch.
So I will be watching. And that's it. There's not a. There was a bit of a post Ben Edwards fight void. There hasn't really been much going on.
That's okay.
I just sucked the energy out of the room. Everyone spent their money watching me. Yeah. No one's got none left. The UFC was staying away from me.
To all our listeners out there, though, stay tuned for an announcement from Benny soon, which will be good. There'll be something coming in the next couple of weeks, I believe.
Oh, I want really? To get a fight booked ASAP.
Yeah, that's right. Cool. So stay tuned. I expect that to be organised too. In other quick Biff news, Dave Toussaint's next fight has been locked in for 8th of September.
Yeah, Friday, Aussie title. Australian middleweight title.
That's right. Who's
he fighting?
Yeah, that's just getting sorted out at the moment. There's a couple of guys who
it will be the highest ranked guy that will take it.
Yeah,
from my experience.
Yeah, well, you'd want to hope so. There's been a few issues in terms of negotiations.
Because no one wants to get flatlined, man.
Yeah, that's right. The thing is, there's a lot of people claiming that they will take the fight. It comes to crunch time and I'm not sure if I want to fight Dave Toussaint anymore. And that was the same with you as well.
Especially in a club in Canberra. Yeah. Come down and have your ass handed to you in front of his home crowd.
In front of, 1,300 really vocal, you know, Canberrans. So, yeah, stay tuned for some big news with Benny Edwards in the next few weeks.
Next week, I'll have some Canelo and Golovkin. I listened to a pre-hype show that Golden Boy put out today. It sounded like bloody Optimus Prime was doing the commentary. Because Leif Schreiber does them for some of the HBO.
Leif
Schreiber's awesome.
Yeah,
and so does Anthony Bourdain does some too.
Yeah, yeah, he's awesome too. But the guy they had for this, it was like Michael Boffer on steroids, man. It was Optimus Prime talking. He couldn't take it serious. It was bloody stupid. So I'll play something for you next week.
The podcast you are listening to is all true.
Proving once again that the truth is not pretty. Just like its hosts.
The Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast with Scotty, Ben and Steve.
And now, with the Macedonian love god, it's time for the vast planet
of athletic endeavour.
Australia won the toss and they're going to bowl.
Scoring brilliant goals.
Nice hole in one. Tour.
Take it away, Stevie.
Thanks very much, boys. I'll try and keep this a little bit brief due to our fantastic interview with Sayer before.
It's a great chat.
It was a great chat. So I'll try and keep this brief to a couple of the major talking points, I feel, this week. Mm-hmm. First one is the Raiders. To me, it looks like their season is over. We haven't talked about the Raiders that much in the last few weeks, but I think it's time now to go in depth about what happened on the weekend. Mm. A couple of things that the big talking points that came out of it was Ricky Stewart in his post-match. Now, there's 2 points to this, I feel. Number one, I don't agree with him when he said that was our best 80 minutes of the season and we played really well. I thought that they were really sloppy and didn't even turn up the first 10 minutes.
Given they had Cameron Smith off the field at like the 55-minute mark.
That's right. You're talking the second half as well.
Yeah,
that's right, with Billy
half,
as well.
And Billy was gone. It was there for Canberra to take that game.
That's right. Yeah.
So, I caught the last 30 minutes of it. A lot of drop balls and everything.
There were a lot of errors.
Problems, yeah.
But I do agree with what Ricky said too, because I don't know if you saw the Newcastle Roosters game on Friday night, but the Roosters, and I didn't expect Newcastle to win. Trust me, the last 2 years I don't expect Newcastle to win. But the Roosters, the game was in the balance and the Roosters scored a try.
Mm.
In that movement, one player knocked on twice.
Twice.
And the bunker went, yeah, no, that's fine. What, are you fucking blind? Like, really?
That was a real example of how bad it can be.
And that's the problem, I think, for most fans in the NRL. They're very frustrated. You know, they spent $2 million on this bunker and they get questions wrong
that's right.
I can clearly see on my bloody flat screen in my lounge room.
When I've had a few
three guys all up, but two guys adjudicating.
That's right. Okay. Two of the main guys, yeah. So, I mean, that side of things I agree with. I've got no qualm about Ricky talking about how bad that was. I don't agree with the fact that he was saying, well, the better side all over the park tonight. Melbourne still showed, you know, plenty of quality.
Yeah.
They went into Hegel's the break.
Munster.
Yeah, he's a great player. I mean, he's
grown a leg after Origin too.
That's right. Yeah, he's the future of them. So I disagree with that. Have a listen to this grab here, Ricky, afterwards, when he talks about the accountability of the referees.
Coaches have to come in here and own up to every question you blokes want to throw at us, and we do it week in and week out. We just keep on aiming up, coming in here, having to answer your questions after our week, season of hard work, and yet why don't the NRL get the referees to come in and answer some of these questions too? Or Tony Archer? When do they ever, ever have to face any accountability? Now, the best thing the NRL done is just kept finding me and finding me and finding me and whacking the hell out of me so I don't say anything to try and create some accountability in the game. Why doesn't the NRL come out and make public some of the communications between the referees, the bunker, and the actual linesman? Then we'll start fixing some things in regards to what's going on in interpretations, inconsistencies. Let's make everybody accountable. I'm accountable. I've got to sit here every friggin' week and answer questions.
I agree with Ricky there. They should. Because I don't think they need to be trotted out in press conferences.
Yep.
But someone from the NRL, from Tony Archer, the referee's boss, needs to, on a Monday, front the media
and have a
and
chat.
Go, that was a screw-up. Yep. They got that wrong.
Yep.
It's only going to make everything better.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. No, I agree with Ricky, but it wasn't the reason the Raiders lost that game the other night.
Correct. And what's your thoughts on the choice of words, boys? I thought he was very careful with what he said. I don't think he can be. I don't think he can be fined for that. I think he didn't bring.
Well, he's
anything.
Very clever. He's
He's paid posed a question.
He's paid $125,000 in fines over his coaching career.
Really?
Yeah.
125K. Wow.
He caught plenty for back in the Roosters, remember, when he was there. He
Uncle Nick Politis would have just go, here you go,
yeah,
Ricky.
Yeah, that's it.
All
sorted. Yeah, go and spray him, mate. Bring it home. So, yeah, look, I think the Raiders are in a position now they probably have to go perfect for the rest of the season now if they're going to stand
gonna
a
be
chance
tough.
Of making
Where are
the
they?
Eight.
We've just had the news. Well, they're sitting on 18 points, so they're about 10th, and yeah. I think the Panthers are with them on 18 as well. So,
no,
or Manly.
I think it's a lot worse than that, Scotty.
Is it?
To be completely honest, Manly's well ahead of them. I believe the Raiders are about 6 points out of the eight at the moment.
No, I thought 22 was
the
bottom.
They're in real trouble. So they're on 18 points. The Raiders in 10th, and the Saints are on 24th in eighth. Right. So
where's Newcastle?
Bottom.
Like I said that off mic.
Now we've just because we record this Tuesday night, we've just had it come through. Cesar Soliola has been rubbed out for 5 weeks. Mm. With 540
I've been
points
rubbing
carry
him out
over.
For 20 years.
He will return. How's this for a bit of a Hollywood script? He'll return in round 26 to play the Storm again.
Yes, down there in the final game of the season.
What's the point system?
Well, it's carryover points. So he got 5 weeks plus 500 points loading. So if he so much as looks at a referee sideways when he comes back, he'll get rubbed out for another couple of weeks again.
That's right. Well. Yeah, you're on a very fine line with the way that judiciary works.
Yeah, one mistake and he'll be out for a couple of weeks again.
Exactly right. So that's not making things easier, you know, for them whatsoever. Papali's out as well, suspended. So
he's back the week after.
That's right.
So he was only out for 2 weeks.
Exactly right. Yeah. So you've got, you know, ahead of the next game, they've got plenty of players missing, which is no good for the Raiders, and a real struggle for them. Yeah, it's been such a. I think if you looked at all 16 teams this year, you'd have to say that they're probably the biggest disappointment. I think based on what they did last year,
form they had the
I don't
end
know,
of last
based
year.
On
Newcastle.
Yeah,
but that was shit last year.
Yeah,
too.
That's right. True. I think the Raiders have had the worst season. You've got a point.
There was high expectations.
You've got a case there, Scotty.
Yeah, given
no
what
doubt,
they had last year, the Raiders were on fire last year.
Even
the
when
the
they was the Bulldogs, they lost to man. It was still a bloody good game, man.
Yeah, exactly right. Look, they've had a poor season, but let's see how they can bounce back in the next few weeks. This week, boys, on Sunday night, we saw Bernard Tomic, our inverted commas troubled tennis player, talking about how tough it is to be
troubled tennis player, millennial wanker.
It's getting harder and harder to defend these boys.
How old is
it?
He? 24?
24 now. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Have a listen to this. This is when he spoke after Wimbledon about his lack of interest. You know how he got knocked out and his lack of interest and his boredom in what he was doing.
You know, wasn't mentally and physically there. With my mental state to perform, and I don't know why, but you know, I felt a little bit bored out there. So, you know, to be completely honest with you,
God, that's frustrating, isn't it?
Yep.
That's so frustrating.
Absolutely, it's a tough one to hear. A guy who's got it all and who's got the whole world at his feet in terms of tennis. Still, the thing that's the most interesting is: are there other players out there who think this? Is he the first guy to come out and say this, or is he just a unique brat like we've talked about, and he's just a guy who's got it all and he's just fed up and he's doing it for the money? That's the saddest part. If you go now and listen to this next grab where he talks to Melissa Doyle from Sunday night, he basically talks about, she poses the question to him about, if you were to go and talk to the 18-year-old Bernard Tomic, what would you do and what advice would you give to yourself? Have a listen to this.
What would you say to a young Bernard Tomic at the age of 14, says he loves tennis from the ground to the sky? What would your advice be to him?
Don't play tennis. Do something you love and enjoy, because it's a grind and it's a tough life. And if you want the good life to come after that, financially wise, maybe do it. But if you don't love it, don't do it. And my position, I'm trapped. I have to do it. I like it. I'm going to continue to do it. But that 14-year-old kid has a choice always of what he wants to do. So that's the message, I think.
Ben Edwards, would you like to tell Bernard Tomic about the fight game and how tough that is?
Yeah, fucking groin.
You want to talk about groin?
Having a bad day in a cage fight's a bit worse than a fucking tennis match. And I get paid about 0.01% of what you make. He's just out of touch, man.
He is.
He made money young. He's still a young guy.
Mm.
He's just completely out of touch, man.
But tell us what you think about that. Does that just not make you sick that someone can earn that sort of money? I mean, this guy's, you know, I think they said in that he's earned like over $10 million. He's got a house in Monaco, a house in Miami. He's got a house in the Gold Coast. You know, he travels the world and, you know, they showed parts of his lifestyle there. Oh, he's a regular day in Miami for Bird Atomic and he's souped up, you know, Jeep or something like that. I think he had just cruising down the streets, not giving a bother in the world. I mean, well, how does that make you feel knowing what you go through every day to, you know, make a living and enjoying what you do? I mean, that makes you sick, doesn't it?
Just ungrateful and out of touch comes to mind. Because I've been ranked higher than him in my sport, which is a lot fucking tougher than tennis. And I live, you know, I'm in Charwood, man.
Driving mum's Commodore.
And the worst part of all that is when you talk about the ungratefulness, Ben, is that the fact that he came out a few weeks ago, as well, I think we talked about it last week, and he said, if you don't, you know, you guys can keep whinging about me and my lifestyle and dreaming about your fast cars while I go and buy them. Yeah. And then he continues to go on and say, you know, we came from nothing. You know, my parents came to Australia with nothing. We had a $200 car, so now I can go and buy them. What's the problem? I've earned it. And do you boys agree that there's a massive contradiction in what he says there? Because he goes back to talk about, I don't like it and it's a grind and I'm bored. And I'm pretty sure I heard him say,
year old self not to do
but I'm pretty sure I said, I like it and you know, I got to keep doing it. I'm trapped. Yeah. Yeah, you're not trapped, buddy. Why don't you go quit and invest your money?
Go and be a brickies labourer for six months and see how much you love tennis.
Like every other Croatian.
Yeah. That's it. So, you know, this just plays into the narrative that we've spoken about in the last few
weeks. And what about how he's saying it? He's sounding less and less Australian every interview.
Sounding more Croat.
He's like he's trying to alienate himself from the people even more.
That's it, yeah. It's a fair point.
Do you know, the
point.
Only way Bernard will get some respect from me, if he goes out onto court, bottle of rakia, and wins a tournament downing rakia after every set.
Yeah. Or wins Wimbledon like Goran Ivanišević out of nowhere or something like that. Yeah. But, you know, it's just a really, really sad story the way these guys are playing it out. I haven't heard anything from Kyrgios recently, which is good. Hopefully he's just recovering from his injury and ready to play. I think it's in Washington on the US
Open. Pulled
a
heartstring, didn't he?
On the US Open tour coming up next. So Tomic is just so out of touch, and it's just such a shame to see what's happening with those guys. And the thing that, you know, pains me the most is that I always loved Davis Cup. I've always you know, been very fond of watching the countries versus the countries in the Davis Cup. And him and Kyrgios, you know, if they can combine together, we're a pretty good unit. And
definitely.
We're in the semis this year, I think, when it comes to the Davis Cup. So it's a real, real shame. Finally, boys, I just wanted to touch on fantastic story, I thought, the last couple of days, the few backstories behind this. Jordan Spieth winning his third major title at the British Open Golf over the weekend. I thought this was fantastic for a number of reasons. Not only did he have a stinker of a final round up until hole 13, you would have seen this, Scotty.
Yeah, he was. He's shocking.
He started the round with a three-shot lead going into the final round. When he got to the 13th, he displayed a drive about 50 metres wide, ended up next to an ESPN lorry on the on the back of this hill. He had to hit over this hill and not hit this truck.
Like a Happy Gilmore shot.
Yeah, literally it was. And it was just one of those ones where the caddy's like, okay, aim over that hill. You got nobody's. It's like me every time I play golf. Just get it over that shed and you'll be right. That type of thing. So he turned that around to then go the next four holes. He went eagle, birdie, birdie, birdie over the next four holes and completely blew Matt Kuchar away, who came second. But there was a great moment in this, I felt, when his caddy basically bailed him up at one point, and he goes, you remember?
Pep talk?
It was a pep talk, but it was a brilliant pep talk. So the backstory to
put him in a body bag,
straight from WWE. But basically, his caddy Grella was talking to him, and he said, "You remember what happened?" He was struggling. This is at the point where he's struggling in his round. And he goes, "Do you remember what happened at Cabo? You remember Cabo?" And Jordan's like, "Oh yeah, I remember what happened at Cabo." The backstory to this was, is about 6 weeks ago, he was down holidaying in Cabo, the Mexican resort.
Yeah, paradise.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He was there.
When Nate Diaz did his training camp for the first Conor McGregor fight.
down there. Paradise, all right. Yeah, good time down there. So he was down there, and he got a photo with Michael Jordan, with Russell Wilson, the quarterback from the Seahawks, Freddie Couples. I can't remember who else was in. There's another two absolute megastars in this. Oh, Michael Phelps was there too. And he was in this photograph, and his caddy was talking to him, saying, "You remember how you went and got that photo? Like a you know, you're almost like a little fan,
fanboy,
a little boy.
Yeah.
Now, you would have seen this, Scotty." And then he goes, "You know the reason that you were in that photo?" He goes, "Because you are great, like those guys are. Those guys are the guys
just pump his tires
who are the best players in what they do."
Phelps, it's a bag of Vance moment.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. And he basically basically pumped him up and gave him that belief. And then afterwards, Spieth came out and he goes, that's just what I needed at the time. I needed someone to just believe in me that little bit when I doubted myself. Yeah. And he gave
it is
him
a Happy Gilmore moment when Kyle Weathers has got him. It's all in the hips.
That's right. It was fantastic. It really had all those fairy tale sort of, you know, moments behind it. And he gave him that pep talk and said, you're getting a photo with these guys because not because you're that your little fan, because you are great, my friend. And he's aiming to next.
Sometimes you can't see it yourself.
That's right. Yeah, exactly right. And he's aiming to at the PGA coming up next month to become the youngest player ever to do the Grand Slam in golf. He's 24 or 25, I believe. Yeah, young.
And look how he's carrying himself.
Exactly right. There's only five guys in history who have done that in golf, won all four majors. So he's the type of guy that you can warm to as a sports fan. He's humble. He's polite. He's very, very nice. He enjoys what he does, and there's no smack talk about him whatsoever. Not that golfers generally have smack talk, but if you go to the other end of the spectrum with guys like, you know, John Daly in the past.
See you on the green at noon.
Quoting it all day.
Let's put it out.
Yeah. So that was a great moment. Congratulations, Jordan Spieth. He really is living up to all the plaudits that have come to him at being so young and being a three-time major winner. If Rory McIlroy can get his game back on, he's a four-time major winner, then you know, you've got the potential for some great rivalries to develop in golf as well.
Definitely.
So good luck to him. And
Jordan Spieth.
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 Jordan Spliff.
Well, as soon as you said Michael Phelps, like, that's the first thing I was thinking. Bong enthusiast.
Oh, dear. And on that note, let's take the mood down a little bit. We mentioned at the top of the show the sad news in the past week of Chester Bennington from Linkin Park taking his own life. So we thought we'd play a couple of Linkin Park songs on the show.
The first big hit.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, One Step Closer. We're going to get on for you now. Four of their albums, their back catalogue, has gone into the top 10.
Proves
that old adage, and no disrespect meant by this, but this is a common saying in the record industry, death sells.
Yeah,
it is absolutely one sure way to get a hit again. And at least, I guess, his family will benefit from that, from the royalties from all these sort of songs. So here's Linkin Park, One Step Closer on the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast.
And I'm about to break.
Thank you, Steve.
What a song.
Need advice? You you've come to the wrong place. But Scotty and Ben will have a crack at your conundrum anyway. It's listener question time.
Yeah, and I'm just going to preface this segment by saying spoiler alert, okay? So if you're not up to speed with Game of Thrones at the moment...
I'm up to speed.
Yeah. So am I, Benny. You may want to put your fingers in your ears and go la, 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 la just for a minute. From Chelsea on the email, boys... Who do you think is going to be sitting on the Iron Throne at the end of Game of Thrones?
The what?
Now, Steve, you don't watch Game of Thrones.
I've never watched an episode, boys.
I'm just happy. You. I'm just happy we didn't get a question about Ben fighting for a change.
Yeah, that's it.
I reckon I'm going to end up on the throne.
Yeah, you will be in about 30.
House Edwards.
I've never seen Game of Thrones, but I won't knock it because there's so many people that love it.
It's a great show.
So many people have told me to get stuck into it. So I'll have a go.
Plenty of boobs, Steve. You'll love it.
I've heard there's a sex in it.
Heaps of rooting me. It's like your autobiography.
You carried around a sword.
He is. I've seen it.
Oh, dear.
It's a claymore.
Well, Benny, just on a serious note, you know George R. R. Martin doesn't mind offing major characters,
yeah,
right?
So
any thoughts? Because at the moment, I mean, you've got...
Well, if you look at who's in the biggest in the position mix. Of power right now, you've got to go with Daenerys, man. Like, she's got three dragons and an army. Yeah, 100%.
What about what happened at the end of episode two?
Just don't worry about it, man.
Don't worry about that?
No, it's all good.
Okay. So you say her? Daenerys?
Yeah, man.
Okay, all right.
You can't have three dragons, man. It's three dragons versus no one's got dragons, man.
Yeah, it won't be Tyrion because he's just not in the position to do it. Will it be Jon Snow or Sansa? You just don't know.
I reckon Littlefinger's going to screw Sansa over, man.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah, he's a creepy little fuck in some way.
It was nice to see Jon Snow smash him up against the wall last night.
Not smashing.
No, not.
Oh, he's got to die, man. Littlefinger's got to die. Imagine if he ends up on the throne.
If there's one piece of criticism I get from a lot of people, it's that the fantasy stuff with the dragons is no good. I hate
that shit too, man.
You too.
I'm into it, man.
Dude,
it's because the way they do it, the character development. Yeah. You get emotionally invested in these people, man.
I tried to read.
And
the first
I hate
Game of
dragons
Thrones
and
book.
Shit. I hate it, man.
My missus is right into fantasy books, loves them. I find them a very hard slog. But I love Game of Thrones.
I can't do it.
Love Game of Thrones. Yeah. So anyway, you're saying Daenerys.
Mother of dragons, man.
Just to be different, I'll say Jon Snow because he knows nothing.
He's all right, man. I like Jon Snow. You know who's a badass? That little chick, House Tyrell, Lila, his name starts with L, that little chick. She fucking bosses the place.
Which little chick?
She's House Tyrell.
Oh, Elenia Tyrell, the old bird.
Yeah, no, the young. She's like 10, man, but she's a boss.
Oh, no, no,
if
no.
If she
no,
had
no,
three
no,
dragons.
No, you're thinking of this, young lady Mormont. Mormont.
Yeah.
Young lady Mormont.
Yeah, you're close, man. Tyrell.
Tyrell.
Yeah, she's
There's
a
like
boss.
There's like 50 houses, man.
She is a boss.
If she had three dragons, the season would have gone for six episodes, man. The whole series would have gone for six.
What is it like? House of Commons, House of Lords, or
no.
Your house?
No,
house names are family names.
Just
Steve.
Families going out.
Chelsea,
like
sorry,
the
House
clan,
of Edwards,
like the clans in Scotland and stuff. Yeah. Fuck each other up, man.
Sorry, Chelsea, about Steve's knowledge. He's very knowledgeable.
He knows
sport.
Nothing.
Yeah,
he's
he
the
does.
John
he's,
Snow.
He's
of
the
this
John
podcast.
Snow of this podcast. Steve Peos, you know nothing.
You're listening to the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast.
Thanks to The Butcher Shop, Dixon and Kayleen.
Well, things are drawing to a close here on the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast. But before we get out of here and have a bit of a link up to next week's episode, episode 8, Uppercut of the Week or High Five of the Week. I think we've decided we're going to do a High Five of the Week.
We're high fiving.
Yeah, indeed. All right, on the count of three. One,
hang on, no, you've got to say who we're high fiving first, man.
Don't do it.
You can't do an ambiguous
Stevie,
high five.
Stevie, you'll be announcing the
people
guy,
don't know what they're happy for.
You take it away, Stevie. Who are we high fiving this week?
Ladies and gentlemen, for the thousands in this podcast room. <Jesus
Christ. laughs> we're going to give the high five this week, boys, to Diamond Dave Toussaint. Looks like he's fighting for the Australian title coming up on the 8th of September. Opponent to be confirmed the next week or two. And it'll be the next step for him on the journey to greatness. Let's see where he can take this all. A lot of talk in the media this week that Horn and Pacquiao are going to go around again
yep.
For a rematch.
It was in the contract.
So I would expect Dave to push us to try and get him back on there.
Yeah.
Whether or not that can happen, I don't know. But hey, it might be his last fight.
Well, if they can do that by the end of the year, wow.
Yeah, exactly right. So yeah, a big fight now for an Aussie title, and then after that again. So a big high five for Dave. He's going places.
I spoke to Gary Hamilton, and he was saying it was a big thing on Dave's bucket list to get the Aussie title, like you, Ben. So
yeah, you said that.
To say you've got it. So that's awesome. So that's worthy of a high five. One, two, three.
No. 1, 2, 3,
one,
clap.
Two, three. Yeah, okay. 1, 2, 3,
clap. Yeah, because you bugged me last time with this.
Yeah, he went on three.
Yeah, and I went after three.
Right, white guy problems.
1, 2, 3. There
look
go.
At that.
That was fantastic.
We're wiggering at it up.
Indeed. Yeah. Next week on the show, we'll have all the wrap of sport. Benny, obviously, will have the wrap up of DC and JJ. That's going to be
aftermath.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'll have as soon as the dust settles, I'll dig around and see what's going on.
Yeah, nice. And I've got to try and back up another top five so I can have three that Ben's liked over the course of 2 years.
That one came in a comfortable second.
It's got to be just tits, sex, you're good, man. I saw him got over a slut called Wanda. That was gold. That was comedy gold.
Wasn't it?
F***ing Nemo. That's genius.
Also, big thanks to Sophie Anger for coming in and joining us. What a great chat we had with him at the top of the podcast this
Brilliant.
Week.
That was awesome. Fantastic. Yeah, what a legend. It really was.
Go on your docs.
Indeed. That's it.
No, it's Oots, isn't it? Ootsie.
No, he's tonguing your dickhead.
F***, man. What do you mean?
On that note.
No, explain it. What do you mean then? What is the difference between Docs
Who's
and
Who's the Samoan brother?
Oh, is it?
Docs is Tongan.
So what's Kiwi?
I don't know.
Bro.
Yeah.
Bro.
Really? So hang on. So
no.
Docs
well, the actual,
Oots.
The Maori word, and it's phonetically spelt T-E-I-N-A, Tina. I Googled it because I wanted to be cool with my Maori mates.
Yeah.
Well, Maori, as they say. But yeah, no, Tongan's Docs.
Who taught you all this, Paula?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Docs,
I got
mate,
all
Oots.
My heaps of Polynesian. Yeah. I know Oots that. Is Samoan. Docs is Tongan.
I've got heaps of those mates too, but I
Hey, you're uncultured, man.
Yeah, well, that's right. I obviously don't have it. From
you're uncultured, bear. It's the Mako brother.
Thanks for joining Polynesian Tales. Every week we go off on some mad tangents. I'm just going to say, get a big black dog up you.
See you next Thursday.
What was mine again? I had a good one.
That'll do.
Well, that's a wrap. Not sure if we solved the problems of the world, but if we didn't, Ben can put those problems to sleep with a well-timed ride.
Scotty can write a scathing diatribe and give them another tongue-lashing.
And Steve can get all Barry White and seduce the world into thinking everything is going to be just fine. That will happen in the next episode of the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast.
Thanks to The Butcher Shop, Dixon and Kayleen. Till next time.
So long.